Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world with better player development than the Los Angeles Dodgers. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and we get better every day.
Yeah, people are tuning into our podcast and they're like, what happened here? I thought this podcast was not very good. And something happened, and now it's good, all thanks to our magical podcast development. Yes, Jake, it is time to preview the National League West. But before we get to our 3.5 hours of Colorado Rockies chat, we do want to remind people about the two exciting things we've announced over the last few weeks. The first being which we have merch, podswag.com/baseball baby. You can find water bottles and mugs and hats and sweatshirts and t-shirts and all of the like, as Jake is so wonderfully modeling right now. Yeah.
One word of warning about the hats. They don't work as soup bowls.
Have you checked, right?
I can't confirm or deny that, but if I've heard that if you pour minestrone into the hats, it will seep through the tiny holes in the top. So okay, don't do that. All right. There's no overt, specific, detailed warning about not using the Baseball Barbacast merch as a soup, hats as a soup bowl, but don't do it.
But we do, again, do have water bottles, do have mugs. So if you want to drink soup out of a lovely Barbacast mug, you can do that. Podswag.com/baseball. The other exciting piece of news is that we will be doing a live podcast event on April 8th in Baltimore at Section 771, formerly known as Sliders. It'll be before the Yankees and Orioles game. Very excited about this. This is going to be a good time. And yeah, we hope you guys come out. If you are anywhere on the Eastern Seaboard and can hop on an Amtrak, you have no excuse for not attending this live podcast event.
At the very least, Jordan's three immediate DC area family members will be there, I believe, as will mine and our friend Andrea from high school. So we got that's seven people.
All right. So that's, and then you can be the eighth. You know, you have that opportunity to join this special live podcast event. Very excited about that. So very cool to see the response for that. And yeah, we'll see. April 8th both feels like tomorrow and a long time from now. Think about how many like teams will be like 1-6 at that point, you know, yeah, and the people will be losing their mind. It'll be great.
Aaron Boone will be, the John Boy guys will be advocating for Aaron Boone to be fired in the middle of their interview with him.
Oh, it'll be a good time. All right, Jake, it's time to get to the NL West. Before we start with the Rockies, I know we've done with some of the divisions, but NL West, like, it does always kind of end up being last. We went into these season previews thinking, oh, maybe we won't do the NL West last, and here we are the day before the season, and we're doing it last. What is that about? Is our East Coast bias just impossible to overcome?
Hey, man, it's all the way over there.
Yeah, it is. They're way over there. Yeah. Part of me feels like it's like I'm up watching the Mariners. So it's not like I have any issue with watching West Coast games. But, you know, there, because certainly I think it also has been part of it that the Dodgers were just, they were doing their own, like they were just running the show the whole time. Not that they're not fun to watch, but I don't know. I think we're heading towards a new era of NL West baseball, except for one team who we'll start with. And that is the Colorado Rockies, who are projected to miraculously win 67 games.
I'll take the under right away.
FanGraphs playoff odds. They won 68 a year ago. Yes, 94 losses a year ago. They finished in last place. I would say, honestly, probably the least relevant team in baseball a year ago. Didn't stop them from being top 10 in attendance because Coors Field is freaking sweet. But this baseball team was not very good.
And they will head into 2023 trying to repeat
irrelevant champs. Yes.
Raise the banner, baby.
That is the Rockies. What did they do this winter? Some pretty weird stuff, as always. Jose Iglesias is no longer there. Chad Kuhl, who was like quietly kind of decent. I know the ERA doesn't look great, but like he had some stretches where like, oh, Chad Kuhl's figuring it out. And Carlos Estevez out the door. He actually was very good. He's gone. Alex Colomé also gone as well. How will they replace him? But in the door comes a bizarre collection of veterans, including Mike Moustakas, Brad Hand, and most recently, Jerks and Profar. They also traded for Nolan Jones and immediately sent him to AAA, even though he would make plenty of sense to be playing in the big leagues. Pierce Johnson also added another Colorado boy. I believe they can't resist bringing those guys home. Brent Suter as well. I think that was an early winter trade. So that's kind of a funky addition there. That is what they did over the winter. Jake, what the hell is this baseball team? Tell me who's going to be playing for them.
I don't know, but I'm just going to read off of Fangraphs. Elias Diaz is behind the plate. First base is CJ Cron, the only player on their team last year with an above average OPS plus. Second base, Ryan McMahon. Shortstop, Ezekiel Tovar, who is a promising little shortstop. Will he change the direction of the franchise? No, but he is not bad. Elijah Montero, the big prize from the Nolan Arenado trade at third base, with an outfield of Jerks and Profar. Chris Bryant is on this team, everybody. And Jonathan Daza in center, with Charlie Blackman continuing his slide down the defensive spectrum all the way to designated hitter. The rotation is Herman Marquez, Kyle Freeland, Jose Urrea, who is one of my least favorite pitchers to watch baseball. The other prize of the Arenado deal, Austin Gomber, and a gentleman named Ryan Feltner. The bullpen, Daniel Bard, Pierce Johnson, Denelson Lamet, more like Denelson Lament, Brad Hand, and Justin Lawrence. Let's get one thing out of the way. Every move the Rockies make feels like when you take an English sentence and you Google translate it into Swedish, and then you translate it back into English. Everything is just slightly off with this team. They are isolationist America in the 1930s. They do fewer trades than any other team in baseball. They are not just behind the eight ball, okay? They're behind the whole pool table. That's the most important thing to know about the Colorado Rockies and why we are going to spend very little time on them. They're like going to, what is it, like old-time Gettysburg?
You mean historic Williamsburg.
Historic Williamsburg. It's like going to one of those Civil War towns where nothing's changed, right? And everyone's wearing the old-timey outfits and they're walking around.
No one gets fired.
And no one gets fired. Everyone's just churning butter, pretending like, you know, Ulysses S. Grant is still president.
But also a nice comparison, because people still go. People still go check it out. It could still be a good time.
Coors Field is a beer bar with a baseball field next to it. But let's be nice people for a quick second and talk about the team. Chris Bryant, who is one of the most relevant, important, and famous ball players at the beginning half of his career, signed with this team last year, played, I believe, no more than 40 games, was actually pretty better than you realize numbers-wise in those 40 games. He did not even hit a home run in Coors Field, which is hilarious to think about. Jordan, is Chris Bryant in his pre-retirement phase already, or is he actually going to hit at all? You think?
I think he is going to hit if he's playing, but both of those things can be true. Of course, 6 years remaining on his massive contract he signed with the Rockies. At the same time, when he signed that and everyone was like, oh, what's Chris Bryant thinking? Doesn't he know that, you know, the Rockies are a mess? It's like, dude, Chris Bryant's already achieved everything there is to achieve. They gave him way more than anyone else was going to. Denver's sweet. And he gets the chill and just rake in Colorado and hit 40 doubles a year until he can't play anymore. Like, that seems like a pretty easy life. Like, I don't blame him. Like, it's again, these guys, they are allowed to prioritize whatever they want, and that's totally fine. At the same time, as far as being a relevant baseball player, yeah, I don't really know what that's really going to look like. I think he's just, as long as he's healthy, just going to be kind of a fantasy baseball star for the next little while.
We had a friend of the show who is a big league baseball player text our group chat with asking for dark horse MVP picks. And he offered up Chris Bryant. And I believe Jordan just responded, ha. Well, now let's just take one last question here, because I don't really have anything else to say about this team. What makes their 2023 season not a complete disaster?
Yeah, what this is maybe related to our barometer Bonds and Ezekiel Tovar, but which we should talk about. But I for this season, I'm not totally sure. I mean, they do have a decent farm even behind Tovar. So maybe some of those guys, like, they have some really interesting hitters that could come up and start to kind of form a core that is decent. But as always, it doesn't matter, because the eternal question in Colorado will be, how are we going to solve the pitching? I was just talking to someone about this yesterday, Like, I wish we had someone, like, I hope we live to see a smart front office with competent ownership give this a try. Like, I really would like to see it attempted. Because as it stands now, we're not getting a true, honest to God, interesting, progressive effort of being successful in Colorado. And so that's, it just feels like, I hope we get to see that someday. As for this season, I have no idea. At the same time, you can, like, they were still above 500 at home last year because that's, they will always have, that is, it is still an advantage in that sense. But until they can figure out how to be even competent on the road, let alone pitching at home, that's just, they're going to stink.
People always talk about, what if Barry Bonds had played in Coors? Well, I want to know, what if the Guardians pitching development system played in Coors?
Exactly. Far more interesting. Barometer, speaking of Barry Bonds, Barometer Bonds, Ezekiel Tovar, their 21-year-old shortstop, I believe, who appears to be opening the season with the team. One of the top, you know, 50 prospects in baseball. Maybe hasn't gotten necessarily the hype because the numbers he's put up in the minors have been merely pretty good and not like, oh my God, you have to know about this guy. At the same time, like, 21-year-old shortstop, like, that is someone that if he is immediately a good player, that's a great building block. Like, that is a very real piece to kind of have and would be huge for them moving forward on offense.
He's younger than Anthony Volpe, but he wears purple, so you've never heard his name.
Exactly. 65 and a half. I think I'm still going to go over. Like, I just feel like the Rockies goof their way to 70 wins most seasons anyway, even when they super duper suck. So I know that seems insane. I think they're projected for basically the worst team, but you're taking the under here?
I don't think they're the worst team. I think, I don't think they're the worst team.
So they've never lost 100 games. Like, think about that.
Well, they're about to. So okay. I will take the under on this.
So this is the year that they finally lose 100 games. All right. That is the Rockies. We are now going to move on to the Arizona Diamondbacks. And because we find the snakes fascinating, we decided to bring in a special guest for this conversation. So let's kick it to our conversation with D-backs beat reporter Nick Pecoro of the Arizona Republic. Nick, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
So by extension, you know, for each division preview, we wanted to bring in a special guest to talk about who we believe is the most interesting team in the division. And we have deemed the Snakes of Arizona to be that team. First of all, I mean, just for the jump, is that dumb? Like, I know you cover this team every day, but like, are we crazy? Or are you also, even relative to an average Diamondback season, like, kind of interested in what this is going to look like?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm super into it. I'm very curious to see what happens. Is that dumb, though? Man, the Dodgers are like crazy interesting too. I mean, I don't know like what went into your decision here, but like I would imagine you're kind of like, we've talked about the Dodgers like forever and ever. Like, let's do something new. But like, I don't know, man. Looking at the Dodgers from afar, I am like really into like I have no idea how it's gonna go there, right? I mean, they could win like 105 or they could win like 90 and like barely squeak into the postseason, right? I don't know. I'm very curious to see how that turns out.
And especially, you know, talking to people who cover the Dodgers for so long, how every year is just the same machine. And now for the first time in a long time, it does feel a little bit different there. What happened in 2022? Give me a brief synopsis of the Arizona Diamondbacks season last year.
Yeah. I guess they were not really a lot of fun to watch for the first few months. And then they traded David Peralta. They brought up Jake McCarthy. I kind of felt like that was the move that kind of changed their fortune in a way. And then they started playing this much more interesting brand and style of baseball late in the year. They bring up Corbin Carroll. And then I think the thing that like really got everyone like enthused about next season. I mean, we all knew Corbin Carroll was going to be a big part of it. But like, I think the thing that got everybody super pumped was when they brought up Nelson and Jameson, and those guys just dominated in their seven starts combined. And it really like changed the whole like perception of the pitching situation in the organization. And all of a sudden you're like, okay, wait a second. These guys can post like 5 or 6 or 7 ERAs or whatever it was in Reno and come up and just shove in the big leagues. And Brandon Pfaadt has like a sub-4 ERA in Reno. Like, how good is this guy going to be? And Tommy Henry came up and threw pretty well too. But like, really, those other two guys just dominating the way they did just infused this like optimism heading into next year.
We're going to get to the pitchers a little bit in a second. That'll be one of our main questions for you. But let's just kind of run through the winter quickly, Jordan. On the way in, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., Gabriel Moreno in the trade for Dalton Varsho. Jordan Luplo out the door. How do they replace him? Well, they're going to try. Evan Longoria signed. Kyle Lewis signed as a bounce back candidate. Andrew Chafin, all roads return to Chase Field for him. And Miguel Castro, the wiry, spindly human scarecrow, will be pitching out of their bullpen. Just quickly running through their starting lineup for this. Oh, go ahead. Yes.
Scott McGuff.
Scott McGuff.
Scott McGuff, baby. Scott McGuff.
Yeah.
Scott McGuff.
Don't forget about him. Anyway, go on. Lineup.
Well, it's funny you say that because Scott McGuff's grandma listens to the podcast. She emails us all the time. No, that's a lie. Starting lineup for the Diamondbacks. Gabriel Moreno behind the plate. Christian Walker at first base. Second base, Ketel Marte. Shortstop is Nick Ahmed. Josh Rojas at third. The outfield will probably be, I mean, they could all play center field, probably, but I imagine it'll be Alec Thomas there to start with Corbin Carroll and McCarthy in the corners, and the DH will be Lourdes Gurriel. In the rotation, at least to start the year, Zach Gallen, Merrill Kelly, Kenny bounce back from letting his country down, Madison Bumgarner, Ryan Nelson, and Zach Davies, with Dre Jameson, who you mentioned before, starting the season in the bullpen. An iffy bullpen that will be led by 2022 All-Star Joe Mantiply, the aforementioned McGuff, Andrew Chafin, Miguel Castro, and friend of the show, not really, Kevin Ginkle. Did I miss anything? Am I off base on anything there?
No, I think that's all about right. I mean, I guess like, I guess that we Alec Thomas could see himself on the bench a little bit more often than maybe we would have thought coming into spring, because like the way that Kyle Lewis has swung it makes you think that Gurriel ends up in the left and Lewis at DH a little bit more than you would have thought, which probably forces, not that he can't play center field, like you said, but it probably moves Carroll to from left to center a little bit more often than I would have anticipated coming into the spring.
So let's, again, I think the pitching is the most fascinating and maybe most important part of their success this season, but let's stick to the offense, because we look at this team and Carroll has all this hype and Christian Walker just had an unbelievable season that nobody cared about. And then Ketel Marte has kind of been the standard. Who is the best hitter on this team? Who would you say right now is their best position player?
Probably the safest bet is Christian Walker. I think like you mentioned how awesome his year was, like, and that's like looking at his baseball reference page, but like, if you look at the batted ball stuff, I mean, the first half of the year, he didn't really put up very good numbers from a results standpoint, but he was just destroying balls. So, I mean, I guess it kind of swung a little bit in the second half where he started getting a little bit more fortunate and wasn't hitting balls quite as hard. But like, I don't think I'd be too surprised if we look up and he hits .280 with 30 homers this year. You know, I think there's more like batting average in there for him. Just the, man, I mean, it's kind of crazy because I don't think people have paid attention, nor should they have, right? I mean, it's the Diamondbacks the last few years, but like this guy has awesome at bats all the time, like all the time. So yeah, I think that's probably the answer. Like, but I mean, if you watch Corbin Carroll's spring, like, dude, I mean, he just hits balls hard. He runs so much fun to watch run. He'd be really good. You never really know, right, till they do it. But like, I don't think I've felt, even with Goldschmidt, like back when he was a rookie, like there was so little support in the scouting community that I was like, I very much needed to be won over. But like, I don't think I've felt this confident about a young player coming up to the big leagues. And Carroll, like, you know, he did do it for what, 100 at bats or something last year, but he never like felt like he got going. He put up pretty good numbers last year, and it like he was like, they wanted to make sure he stayed eligible for the rookie of the year. So he was like, play a game, sit a couple, play a couple, sit again. Like, he never really got on a roll. And he had a 800 something OPS. So I don't know, dude. I mean, he could have a really huge year.
He also like hasn't played that much baseball because of all the time he missed. He made it up to the big leagues as a 21-year-old. With what, under 150 career minor league games?
Yeah, I think he has like 170 something pro games now, which is just like, I mean, I was asking Hazen that when they did the extension, just like, how wild is that? You're extending a dude for $111 million and he's barely played like a full season of any level worth of baseball, and you're that confident. Like, that just shows you how good he is, right? Just how I don't even think that extension is like, that's not that crazy, but like, you know, it was just, it's so unusual.
142 games in the minor leagues over three seasons, 32 in the bigs in that short stint at the end of last year. Let's pivot to the pitching now. And the question that I have for you, how much leash will be given to the Madison Bumgarner, Zach Davies duo before the front office pulls the plug or phantom ILs someone or trades someone away and then replaces those guys with Dre Jameson, who's starting the year in the bullpen, and Brandon Pfaadt, who is starting the year in AAA?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably going to be like a sliding scale with a number of different factors being considered, because a couple of years ago, this organization had 4/5 of its rotation on the injured list at the same time. And that's a big reason why they lost 110 games. So I think that there's a little bit like a little bit of like built in, like, you know, I just think everybody is still just a little bit afraid of having that sort of thing happen. So like, I think that for either of those guys to have them pull the plug on them in April, they would have to be really bad. And then also they would have to feel really good about not just Pfaadt and Henry and Jameson's chances, but also like, okay, how is Bryce Jarvis throwing? How is Blake Walston looking? How does Peter Solomon look? Like, all these guys that could be their depth options are going to have to look good. Once you get past though, that like that stretch, once you get more into the meat of the season, and you've gotten past that point of the year where like starting pitching typically gets hurt, right? And you can kind of feel a little bit better about this guy taking the ball every 5 days the rest of the way. Then look, they're trying to win this year. Right. If Bumgarner looks the way that he looked in the last two and a half months of the season, like, that's not competitive. You know, he's looked a little better this spring, but you can't give that guy the ball every 5 days. If you're trying to get to the playoffs, like, Bumgarner was sort of, I guess, like, shielded the last couple of years by the fact that they were never playing meaningful games. There was a 48-hour period last August or so. I remember we went into San Diego and these guys were like red hot, and it wasn't really that they were in the wild card hunt, but they were just close enough that you could sort of start saying like, well, okay, what happens if, you know? And I kind of wondered like, okay, do they have to make a decision now on Bumgarner? Like, but then they lost a couple of games and they were back to being like 7 games out, and they were never over 500. So it wasn't ever that close, but like, you know, that's the kind of decision they're going to have to make this year.
In his last 10 starts, this is maybe for people who stopped watching baseball in 2014, and now you're just tuning back in to listen to the Diamondbacks in 2023. First of all, interesting approach. But Madison Bumgarner last year in his last 10 starts, 54 innings, 7.12 ERA. Like, yeah, you said, unstartable, right? 34 strikeouts in 54 innings, 957 OPS against.
Not what you want.
Yeah. Well, and also, I have to imagine for a team like this, and this is a bigger question, I mean, he's their highest paid player by a large degree. And I have to imagine that's another thing where maybe some owners would be quicker to cut bait. But yeah, how do you demote him? Do you, like, who knows what you do with him? But I don't know how much that's going to factor into the decision one way or the other. But that's also a good transition to, unless you have any thoughts on that element specifically, it's a good transition to our last question, which is something you just referred to, which is that the Diamondbacks are trying to be good this year. And so you telling us that is maybe a hint to this question, but is how good do they really think that they are? Because some of the moves that they've made and being aggressive and calling up some of these pitchers and some of these hitters, suggests that they do feel like they're opening a window. At the same time, you say, okay, well, you traded away Varsho. You did this. You've committed to Zach Davies as part of your rotation again when you might have other better options. Maybe not. How good do they think they are? Or is this more about like, we want to be competent this year and then the window is opening?
Well, I think they want to have as many pieces in place in case the window does open right now. So like, I think Davies like kind of can work in both directions in that argument, right? Just to buy them some security and kind of raise the floor a little bit, in a sense. But like, I mean, back to like the main part of your question, like, I think they're kind of not sure, you know? I mean, they have so many young players and guys arrive on different schedules and, you know, some need 150 at bats, some need, you know, 800 at bats to get comfortable. So I think they're hoping that some of these guys are on the shorter end and that, you know, they kind of keep getting better as the year goes along and that they look up in August and they're right there. I don't know. It's hard to like, as a beat writer, you're like trained to like focus in on the like how it's going to go terrible. Right. So like you can sort of like, I don't know, Kyle Lewis is going to get hurt again. The young guys are going to struggle. You know, the guys that pitched so well in the second half last year were way over their heads. You know, that was the best year that Merrill Kelly will ever have. Christian Walker's never going to be able to do that. You know, Ahmed is going to get hurt again and Perdomo is going to hit like he did last year. You know, all those, like, you can just sort of like see all these ways that it goes wrong. But like, I don't know, man. I mean, Corbin Carroll looks awesome. Gabriel Moreno looks awesome. Jake McCarthy is like, Jake McCarthy and Josh Rojas are like perfectly positioned to just dominate on the base paths and take full advantage of these new rules. Like Jameson and Nelson have stuff. Brandon Pfaadt looks really good. Like that guy's just, I don't know what else you would really need to see to feel like really good about. And again, it's a young starter, so who knows, but to feel really good about giving him the ball. Did you have some?
Just on Pfaadt, like it almost feels like had Jameson and Nelson not did what they did last year, he could have just won the job this spring.
Oh, 100%.
Right? Because it just feels like had we not seen that from them, they would have all roughly been coming into the spring in sort of the same spot with Pfaadt maybe the best of the bunch in terms of what he had already performed at Reno. And instead, because of how good they looked, were understandably want to give Jameson and Nelson kind of the first crack at it. But it is interesting because Pfaadt is clearly, I think, the most celebrated at this point, you know, by prospect, you know, evaluators.
Yes, he had like, I don't think you can really debate that he had the best spring of those three guys. I mean, he threw the ball better than, I mean, he may have had the best, I don't know. I guess you can play that game where like Pfaadt exited in the first inning of a start and came back out for the second, you know, and if all those runs have scored, you know, how different would the whatever. But like, as far as like pitch quality stuff, like getting swings and misses, you know, aggressiveness, just kind of seemingly just like ready to step in and be great. I just think he looks like he checks all the boxes. And yeah, I think you're exactly right. Like those guys, the other two are just ahead of them. You know, they're already on the 40. They've already pitched great in the majors. Like that should count for something. So, I mean, to the extent that it was a competition, like, he kind of needed things to break his way. Right. And they like those guys threw well enough and had good enough stuff that it kind of just had to be them.
So let's get to our barometer bonds, our Barry Bonds for each team. Who will be the X factor, the determining player on this team that will determine whether, Diamondbacks, watch out, here they are. It's August, you know, 17th, and they're two back of the third NL wildcard spot, or maybe hopefully not as bad as 21, but it's like, ah, this did not go as we expected. Who's the one player? We have one in mind that I want to ask about, but who is one player that you feel like will have a huge impact on how good this team can be?
I mean, Corbin Carroll is the cop out, right? That's not the answer.
I mean, it's a good answer, but I feel like we have already sort of.
Because, like, I feel like you can pencil, maybe this is being too presumptuous, but I feel like you could probably pencil in somewhere between 3 and 5 war for him. Like, yeah. If he's not a 3-win player over a full season, like, something went wrong.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Whereas, I in my mind, it's like Merrill Kelly.
That's a fair one. Yeah. That's totally fair. I think that if he is the, like, you know, I mean, pitched like a number 2 basically last year, he logged 200 innings. Not very many guys do that these days, and that's super valuable for a team. You can make that argument. I kind of want to say Cattell. I just think it's sort of fascinating that, like, I mean, it happened on this podcast. It happens whenever anybody talks about the Diamondbacks. Like, you kind of can construct this narrative of them being awesome and, like, not talk about Cattell. And, like, that guy has had the best season in the majors of anybody on the roster, right?
Easily.
Is he 29 years old right now?
Yeah,
29.
That's like, there's really no reason why he can't still be really good. I mean, maybe 2019 was the ball, right? I mean, maybe he's more of a 15 or 20 home run guy than a 32 home run. Is that what it was in 19?
Yeah, 32 home. But, like, 42 doubles last year was a career high, right? Like, even though there were some parts of his season that were disappointing, like, he had some crazy hot months. Like, he was still pretty damn good.
In 2019, Acuna hit 41 homers and stole 37 bases and finished behind Ketel Marte in the MVP voting. That says something, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, he looks better than he did, like, physically. Like, he's moving around really well. That was a big thing last year at second base. He just didn't look like he could play that position anymore. And then you kind of wonder, what's it going to look like with no shifts and all that. But he looks a lot better. He's, I don't know. I mean, early in camp, he did, at least. He was hitting balls hard. He went to the WBC and came back, and his last several games have not been great. So we'll see. I think that's an interesting game. I'm not going to argue with Merrill, though. I think that might be the correct answer.
All right. Our over under, courtesy of whatever sources we get from this, 74.5. I know they're projected for, I believe Fangraphs has them around 76, 77. Now, 74.5 doesn't sound like a very good team, even one that would just, you know, sniff the wild card. Are you at least optimistic enough to take the over on that? Because I certainly am.
Yeah, I think so. It's a weird time that they have decided to try to start to be good, because most teams in baseball have decided to try to be good this year, it seems like. So that does make it a little bit harder. But I mean, like we were saying at the beginning, like, I'm not super sold on the entire division. I think, like, you know, beyond that, like, the more balanced schedule probably plays in their favor, right? So yeah, I think I'd go over.
Jake, are we feeling confident enough in 75 for the Snakes, or are you okay? Yeah,
you're absolutely, you're absolutely confident enough. I just feel like if Bumgarner is really bad and they're in it, and the prospect pitching is good enough, and what we saw last year gave me confidence to think that some of it, or enough of it, they will give those guys an opportunity. But I really do think Bumgarner is the anchor for this team, and the longer he starts into the year.
In a bad way.
Yeah. Bad anchor. Yeah. Like a sinking ship anchor.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we'll find out. Nick Pecora, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate all of your D-backs insight. We'll have you on again soon.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, everybody. I'm James Hinchcliffe.
And I'm Alexander Rossi. And we're the hosts of Off Track with Hinch and Rossi.
As two friends who have a collective 18 years of experience driving an IndyCar and one season of experience on Dancing with the Stars, we know what it takes to be successful on and off the track or dance floor.
That's why each week we will give you a peek behind the front curtain and tell you what life is really like for professional IndyCar drivers and second place finishers on dancing television shows.
Download Off Track with Hinch and Rossi on Apple, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back here on Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. Thank you to Nick Pecoro for explaining to us how snakes work. But let's move on to the San Francisco Giants, the favorite team of producer Chris. A team that maybe Jordan should play in Iowa, considering it is mid. Move to the Midwest, San Francisco Giants. Move to the mid. They put the mid into Midwest because they're in the West. There's a joke there somewhere. I'll let you know if I find it. What happened a year ago to the Giants? Yeah.
So 2021, they were a mid team that somehow won 107 games. And last year, in fitting fashion, they came crashing back down to a perfect 81-81 and in third place, despite not looking that different than the year before. Yeah, they were like totally fine. They could not have been more fine. They were not good. They were not bad. That was the Giants. What did they do this winter? Well, they tried to do a lot and ended up doing still a lot, but not in the way that they expected. Out the door from last year's team, of course, our good friend Carlos Rodon. Evan Longoria's stint in San Francisco is over. Brandon Belt's time in San Francisco is over. Tommy La Stella, I know they will miss him. Those guys are gone. Who's in? Oh, Carlos Correa. Oh, Aaron Judge. Oh, so close. Well, that's okay. They got some dudes who love to spend time on the IL, but also rake when they're not. That's Michael Conforto and Mitch Haniger in the outfield. They brought in Roberto Perez to play catcher in case Joey Bart stinks. And then in the rotation, they replaced Carlos with a combination of Ross Stripling and Sean Manaea. I actually like those moves. And then, of course, they added Tyler Rogers' twin brother, Taylor Rogers, for the bullpen.
Behind the dish for the Giants, Joey Bart, former top prospect, number two overall pick, who kind of a critical year for him. He'll be backed up by Roberto Perez and Austin Wins, friend of the show. First base, God, this team is so weird. Lamont Wade, Wilmer Flores, some JD Davis. Second base, mostly Tyro Estrada. Shortstop, mostly Brandon Crawford. Third base, mostly David Villar, with some Davis and Flores sprinkled in. In the outfield, Michael Conforto, Mitch Haniger, Mike Yastrzemski with Jock Peterson, hopefully spending the bulk of the time at designated hitter. In the rotation, it's a very adult group. Logan Webb is the baby here, which is interesting considering he's been the best pitcher over the last couple of years. Behind him, Alex Cobb, Anthony DeSclafani, Alex Wood, Ross Stripling, Sean Manaea, and maybe even a little bit of 6'11" Sean Jelly. That's right, 6'11" Sean Jelly. The bullpen, Camilo Doval, who absolutely rules and is an incredible watch if you've never had the opportunity. Taylor Rogers and Tyler Rogers. They're twins. People will be talking about that quite a bit. Those are your San Francisco Giants. But let's begin in the winter. Jordan, did they have the best bad offseason ever?
Yeah, I guess. I think, right, because some people call it like a disaster. Right. Not just a bad offseason. Like some people are referring to this Giants offseason as one of the worst we've seen in some time just because of the expectations and the hopes and the dreams to land someone at the top of the market. Even
it
like
wasn't, No. It wasn't just the expectations. It was the reality.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's one thing to be like a Mariners fan or a, you know, I'm trying to think of another example of like a White Sox fan, maybe where it's like, oh, maybe we'll sign a big free agent and then you don't. The Giants twice, okay, twice, two separate times. If you were on your phone, you got a notification, Giants signed the big free agent and then they ended up with neither of them, okay? Neither Crayon nor John. Twice, it happened. It was not expectation. It was brief reality.
But even if you let them slide on those two, you know, Steven Sanga or Nimmo, like there were other even top guys that they still were not able to land. Now, we don't know how aggressive they were with those. I think Nimmo, we do know, but they weren't necessarily as aggressive as for these other guys. At the same time, you wake up here, it's almost opening day. Did they get better compared to last year? I think yes. I think they did. I think they improved their baseball team, which, God, I would hope so, considering how much money they did ultimately spend and how much money they had to spend. So, sure, is it the best bet offseason? It's probably pretty close to one.
Improving this team, I think it has less to do with who's on the way in or on the way out, and more about simply improving the defense. This team defense was one of the worst team defenses statistically that we've seen over the last 10 years. Just an abysmal, abysmal showing from this group. Yeah. Do we have any faith, any reason to think that it will improve in 2023?
Defense-wise, I mean, they didn't add stellar defenders. Like Mitch Haniger, I love the guy. He is not an impact defender. Conforto is fine at best, right? And like, I guess Yaz is like pretty good in center. I guess they could have Austin Slater if they want to move, you know, Conforto or Haniger to DH. But unless Brandon Crawford is suddenly getting back to whatever 3D war, like I don't. And unless David VR is way better than I realize, then no, I do not see this team suddenly having a great defense. Honestly, their best chance at a great defense is probably having Roberto Perez behind the dish, combining with the pitchers, you know, like that. Yeah. That is something that would maybe be an upgrade over what they had a year ago. But other than that, no, I don't see it really much better at all.
So I have a little bit more faith than you for this defense. They had a lot of weird injuries last year that forced some players into positions they don't play a lot. Mm-hmm. Jock Peterson played 102 games in left field. He is one of the worst defenders in the entire league. Darren Ruff spent a lot of time at first base and left field. He is a horrible defender. Yermín Mercedes played 8 very memorable games in left and 4 very memorable games at first.
So
those, I understand that's not a lot, but these games add up when you're pushing guys out of position due to injury. If they can stay healthier and simply run out a below average defense, not even an elite, you know, St. Louis Cardinals defense, just a regular med defense, they will pick up wins that way. Yeah. If they perform the same they did a year ago.
I mean, you say that's not a lot. That many games of Yermín in the field is definitely a lot of games. And then the bigger question is, like, now the Giants, we can joke about how mid they are, but how what does it even look like? Like, paint a picture. You know, we talk about paint a picture of the Astros losing the division. Paint a picture of the Giants being up there with the Dodgers and Padres. Now, we just saw it in 21 when we didn't exactly think we would. And I think that's a pretty basic sense, right? This team is not bad. I'm looking at this team and I can see them winning even 90 games. I can see them winning 90 games, right? It's going to have to come in. What was so amazing about the 21 team is that the Dodgers were amazing. It's not like it was a combination of we're playing to our 100th percentile and these other teams are choking, or at least the Dodgers weren't choking. They were just as good and they somehow matched them. That's going to be required, I think, even more this season for the Dodgers and Padres to really fall back.
This team could win a wild card. Easy. Easy could win a wild card. I don't think they will. I'd probably bet against it, but they are totally, like, I guess the way the Giants continue to sustain themselves against the Dodgers and the Padres is to build an 83-win team every year and hope that every other season a bunch of things go right and a bunch of guys kind of burst and kind of pop, and that 83 turns into 92. One season, it turned into 107. God damn it. You know, they do need to spend money to get a star. There really isn't anybody like that except for Shohei Ohtani on the market next year. But it's clear that they're willing to spend the dough. Like, they did it twice. They went for it twice. We know that. So I actually have some faith in the Giants. I do think a bit of shine has fallen off GM Farhan Zaidi, who after 21 was hailed as, you know, the great savior of baseball analytics. 2022 showed that there are limits to that. And I think that he will fall somewhere in the middle of those two extremes.
I agree. Our barometer bonds is
one more quick thing on Farhan.
Yeah.
if I was starting a team tomorrow, I would pick him to run it. Just saying.
Yeah, he's still your pick. Yeah, no, I, you know, last year we maybe should not have been as surprised by the regression to that degree. Like that it looked like an 81 win team, and that's what it was. Our barometer Bonds is really the whole outfield, just because of how volatile Conforto and Haniger are health wise. But I was saying last year, before he suddenly was going to be out for the whole season, I really feel like he's pretty underrated. Like he is one of the safer, like he, you look at his track record, one of those guys that has never been a bad hitter. Like he had, you know, a run of all-star and then back down to more, you know, 120 OPS plus, but Michael Conforto has been really good, you know, and or at least average in a way that is a very valuable player. Again, you're not getting a ton of defensive value there, but I'm pretty bullish on him. Haniger is, I mean, he's one of my favorite players. I'm rooting so hard for him. Of course, he gets to go home. He truly, like, he's actually from a lot closer than Aaron Judge was to the Giants. And so I'm excited for him to get to play back home. But I he's already hurt. So it's like, I just don't really know how much I'm counting on him.
Aaron Judge cannot take public transportation from his house to the Giants stadium. I believe Mitch Haniger can. The over-under here is 81.5. I will take the over. How do you feel?
Yeah, I'll take the slight over as well. But this is another one where, you know, who knows with injuries? And injuries, again, this is not a team with particularly awesome depth. As we saw last year, I think that is still kind of true, even with some interesting prospects arriving in Double-A and whatnot. All right, let's move on to the Los Angeles Dodgers. Jake Mintz. They are projected, the Dodgers, you know the Dodgers, right? They
heard win 100 the million Brooklyn games Dodgers. Every year.
Yeah.
The Brooklyn Dodgers, yes.
Yeah. Fangraphs playoff odds has them at 88 wins. 88 wins for the Dodgers, who won literally every time I see it, I'm like, that didn't actually happen. 111 Dubskis a year ago, which is just crazy. By the way, their Pythag was actually better than that. Their Pythag had him at 116 wins. Yeah, it's one of the best teams I've ever seen. But it's a very different team. It's a very different team, Jake. They also had kind of a... I mean, I think there are some Dodgers fans that also feel like it was one of the worst off-seasons that they've ever seen. And why is that? Well, Trey Turner, you might have seen him homering every 25 minutes during the WBC. He is no longer on the team. He is no longer their shortstop or their second baseman. Tyler Anderson and Andrew Heaney, big parts of their rotation last year, are gone. They DH swapped Justin Turner for JD Martinez. Cody Bellinger, his time in LA is gone. Craig Kimbrell, what a fun experience he was. He's gone. Edwin Rios is gone. And of course, Trevor Bauer is in Japan. Who he play for. David Peralta is now on the Dodgers. David Peralta's on the Dodgers. Cool. Miguel Rojas, he'll be playing shortstop after the Gavin Lux injury. Jason Hayward, wow, he's actually going to be on the team. Noah Syndergaard, and of course, a reinvigorated, surely, Shelby Miller.
Quick Shelby Miller thing. You remember the time when we first started, like early on in Cespedes Family Barbecue history, Shelby Miller followed us on Twitter. We weren't sure why. And then I got really drunk one night, freshman year of college, and DM'd Shelby Miller a bunch of stuff. And he never responded. And yeah, we've never talked to him since.
I think he's since deleted his Twitter, which suggests to me that like you kind of rattled him.
Yeah, this is good advice for any kids listening out there. If you start a baseball Twitter account with your friend from high school and you get drunk one night in college, don't DM players.
Not worth it. They probably won't respond. And worst case scenario, they delete it. And then their career goes off the rails. And then they end up on the Dodgers. So
be careful. I can't speak from experience. It happened to a friend of mine.
Let's move on to what this Dodgers team is actually going to look like in 2023. Behind the dish, one of the best catchers in all of the land, it is Mr. Will Smith. First base, Frederick Freeman, he's pretty good. Second base, Miguel Vargas, perhaps? Rookie? Okay, sure. Shortstop, Miguel Rojas, perhaps? Not a rookie, not plan A, but he will be playing shortstop.
Still a Miguel.
Third base, Max Muncy. Ooh, what an interesting player for this season. Left field, David Peralta, probably with a little Chris Taylor mixed in. Maybe we get a little James Outman. Center field, Trace Thompson, incredible career revival last year. Right field, Mookie Betts, ever heard of him? DH as I mentioned, the new Justin Turner, Mr. JD Martinez, rotation. Julio Urias will start on opening day. Dustin May and his crazy hair is back and better than ever. Clayton Kershaw is still pitching. How many innings? Who knows? Noah Syndergaard's on the Dodgers now, the fifth spot out of camp, looking like Ryan Pepio with a couple guys hopefully back soon, most notably Tony Gonsolin, who is starting the year on the IL, but I don't believe he will be out for too long.
First topic that I would like to discuss. The Dodgers offseason was so not Dodgers. They did not really do a whole lot. And they enter this season with more question marks than they have in probably a decade, I would say. Now, the reasons behind that offseason, I guess we could talk about it for a while. How much of it is them wanting to trust young guys? How much of it is wanting to just regular cheapness? How much do they want to change the energy? How much of it was the Trevor Bauer money? How much of it is saving up for Ohtani? We have to, you know, truth serum Andrew Friedman to really learn that. What I'm interested in as it relates to the offseason is, like, this is the full test of the Dodgers magic thing, right? The Dodgers have received so much acclaim for being such an incredible player development organization and for doing all the little things at the edges right, in addition to having all the money and the resources and all the free agents. This is the year where that really gets put to the test because, you know, last season, most of that team, I guess the bullpen is an exception, but like most of the lineup last year was just really good, famous baseball players. Mm-hmm. You know, Trey Turner, Max Muncy, Freddie Freeman, Will Smith. I know they get credit for developing Will Smith. Mookie Betts, who they traded for. You know, they had to spend prospect capital to acquire some of those guys. But this is the year where we really see how much does it actually work.
But it's a combination of that and the veterans, right? It's a combination of, yes, okay, if you believe in Miguel Vargas and you believe in James Outman and you believe in Michael Bush and these guys, then you have to be right about them. But also, you are truly relying on Drace Thompson again, you know, out the gate. You're truly relying on a 36-year-old, almost 36-year-old David Peralta and Jason Hayward, whatever is left with him, you know, not to mention, you know, giving your four-starter spot to Syndergaard. So there, it's kind of both levels of it. And again, everything they've showed us sees that they're going to get most of these things, right?
Yeah.
At the same time, like, they don't have that margin for error now because the Padres are so loaded that it's – I trust that it's they are still going to be an awesome team. I think 88 wins is just insane for a projection. I'll smash the over on that. We'll get to the over-under is much higher in a second. But I still feel like you're totally right. Like, they this is the test where – they do not, they cannot just fall back and be like, oh, well, it's fine. We still have like four of the best players in the league, so we're chilling.
This is like when Jordan got to college and actually had to do his homework. Let's start with some of the veteran slash journeyman players. Every year, the Dodgers sprinkle their magic pixie dust on an old guy you haven't thought about in a couple of years, and they turn into an all-star level player. It happened with Trace Thompson last year, Evan Phillips. You know, Yency Almonte, hey, do it every year. Here's this year's group. I want you to pick a guy from this group, Jordan. David Peralta, Miguel Rojas, Jason Hayward, Alex Reyes, Luke Williams, Steven Duggar, Yusnail Diaz, Wander Suero, Noah Syndergaard. Which of those guys puts up like 3.5 to 4 war?
I'm pretty bullish on Peralta, honestly. He's someone, especially when you saw the kinds of tweaks he was making last year where suddenly he was lifting the ball like crazy. And I know it had mixed results, but part of me feels like that is something. It's not like the Dodgers were not familiar with David Peralta. I mean, they've been playing him, you know, multiple times a year for the last decade. And I just feel like even though after the trade with the Rays, it did not actually go that well, he's been one of my favorite players for a long time. And I trust that they see something in him that is able to be unlocked. Even if it isn't a platoon role, I think that could maximize it even more because he was playing every day in Arizona. And I think if they can give him the matchups and the right tweaks where I think he could easily have like a, you know, a, I guess like his career best OPS plus is 137 in his second year. I could see something, yeah, like the 120, 130 range.
Give me the Jason Hayward full renaissance. That's what I'm rooting for. My dark horse here is Luke Williams, who you probably don't know a lot about, but he was a huge member of the Team USA group in the Olympics, right? To help or no, to help send USA to the Olympics on the national team. He was on the Giants, on the Phillies. I'll throw some money in the Luke Williams pot. Young players. Yeah. We have
I was just going to say, like, the playing time is very unclear for Hayward and obviously for someone like Luke Williams. But yes, I'm not counting any of these guys out.
Alex Reyes feels like a, 139 ERA plus guaranteed whenever he's healthy and pitching on the mound. Young players, James Outman, Miguel Vargas, Ryan Pepio, Michael Bush, Andy Pages, Gavin Stone. Which of these guys do you have the most faith in immediately establishing themselves as a Dodger?
I am like the highest on Michael Bush and the lowest on Miguel Vargas. Clearly, Vargas is going to get the first crack at it. And so it's possible that he's good enough that the ability to get Bush in the lineup this season is going to be harder. Outman, too. You know, these guys are on the team already. But I think you got to look at those pitchers in Miller and Stone as ones that could come up and take a job much faster. I think the leash on Pepio is probably going to be a little bit quick, just shorter, just because of how good Miller and Stone are and already were last season. Like, Stone had arguably the best statistical season in minor league baseball last year, this side of Andrew Painter. And he's just not. I saw Dodgers fans that I, whose opinions I trust, were like, Gavin Stone should be the fifth starter right now. And even above Bobby Miller, which is really saying something. So I just think Pepio's grasp on that, let alone like Kershaw is going to miss time at some point this year. And like, there are going to be opportunities. So that's kind of where I'm at on those guys. I think the ceiling with those guys is way bigger. Like, I could totally imagine one of those guys starting a postseason game in a way that the other hitters, it's just going to be kind of an amalgamation of role players.
Barometer Bonds, we have the name Max Muncy written down here, and you can talk about him in a second, Jordan, but I'm actually going to select Chris Taylor. Chris Taylor, before last season, signed, and he went to free agency and re-upped with the Dodgers for, I believe, 4 years. He is kind of the pride and joy of their Magic player development, hitting development system. And then last year, he absolutely sucked. He had an 86 OPS plus. He slashed 221, 304, 373. He had only 10 home runs. He was just bad. I guess he was bad at a lot of different positions, but he was still just bad. If he's just bad, that's just bad.
Yeah. And the difference for me is that Chris Taylor was bad the whole time. He was bad in the first half. He was bad in the second half. He actually was worse in the second half. Whereas Muncy, while the overall line looks troublesome, right? 713 OPS. He was heating up. Like, he had, there were times last season where it was like, okay, we're starting to see Max Muncy look like Max Muncy, well over 800 OPS in the second half. Or at least down the last month or so. So I am much more bullish on Muncy, and I also think that his ceiling is always higher than Taylor anyway. So that's why I think he's more important for them here, especially since he's going to be more in the middle of the lineup than the bottom. But I agree, like, Taylor was a big bet to retain him. And if he's just like not a useful player anymore, no matter how many positions he's playing, that's a pretty big deal.
Over under, what's the number?
So the number that I could find was 96.5, which is amazing, right? But also, like, they won 111 games last year. Like, they won 111 games last year. Like, Trey Turner is amazing. They lost a lot of guys. Did they lose that many guys? I mean, maybe. I'll take the slight under, but I still feel pretty good about close to this.
I will take the under.
Now, all of this is still kind of shocking that we are talking about the Dodgers fourth and not fifth. That is a new reality that we have, and that is because of the San Diego Padres. But before we talk pods, we are going to take a quick break from this pod and be back in just a moment.
Negro Leagues Baseball Museum President Bob Kendrick hosts the SiriusXM original podcast, Black Diamonds.
The Negro Leagues didn't care what color you were, and they didn't care what gender you were. Can you play? Hear stories of the leagues and legends that shaped sport, culture, and society.
That's why the museum is so important. It's like, we are never going to forget you.
Episodes of the award-winning Black Diamonds are now available wherever you get your podcasts.
We're not talking about balls and strikes. We're talking about your life.
And we're back here at the end of the NL West preview baseball barbacast. It's time to talk about the San Diego Padres. Oh my goodness. The team that used to be the least relevant team in baseball is now arguably the most, and they come into the season with sky-high expectations. What happened a year ago? They won 89 games. That doesn't sound so great. What's so amazing about winning 89 games? Well, went into New York, embarrassed the Mets, went to the DS and slayed the proverbial dragon in the Dodgers. And they went to the Phillies and got kind of steamrolled. Bryce Harper, swing of his life, et cetera, et cetera. Padres season over. So they go into the winter. And AJ Preller, you know AJ Preller, he's a pretty chill guy. He doesn't like to make any sort of extreme choices or big splashy signings. He kind of likes to do stuff on the margins. Just kidding.
Not.
Tried to sign everybody. Was just walking around with million-dollar bills with Peter Seidler's money saying, hey, will you take this? Will you take this? Will you take this? Will you take this? Trey Turner, we'll give you all this money. He's like, remember we drafted you. He's like, no thanks. Aaron Judge, hey, come on over. We'll come check out Petco Park. Maybe we'll change your mind. No, sorry. Xander Bogaerts, no one wants the Red Sox are lowballing him. Okay. We will very casually give Xander Bogaerts, what was it, an 11? Was it an 11-year deal? Xander Bogaerts is now on the Padres, as well as a whole bunch of other famous players, including Nelson Cruz, Matt Carpenter, Michael Wacha, and Seth Lugo in the rotation. Out the door, Manaea, Brandon Drury, Josh Bell, all these guys that they kind of added over the last couple of years. And honestly, one of the faces of their team and franchise, Will Myers, no longer on the Padres, as well as their walk-off hero last season, Jorge Alfaro. Jake, this team is crazy loaded, crazy fun. Tell me who will be playing for it.
Austin Nola behind the dish. First base will be Jake Cronenworth. Second base, Ha-Sung Kim, moving over from short, where he was outstanding defensively last year. He's an early favorite for the Gold Glove at second. Very overqualified for that position. Xander Bogaerts at short. Manny Machado, who got an enormous extension over the offseason to remain in San Diego for basically the rest of his life, at third base. The outfield, Trent Grisham in center. Juan Soto in left. Eventually, Fernando Tatis Jr. in right. For now, it's David Dahl, which is kind of funny. And then the DH is Matt Carpenter, and I would imagine Nelson Cruz sometimes as well. The rotation, Yu Darvish, Blake Snell, Nick Martinez, Michael Wacha, Seth Lugo, as Joe Musgrove and Adrian Morejon start the season on the IL. In the bullpen, Josh Hader, Steven Wilson, Nabil Crismat, the other Luis Garcia, the one who gave up the home run to... No, was that him?
No, Suarez.
It was Suarez. Sorry, I'm losing my mind.
You're tired. It's okay.
I only watched that video 80 times yesterday as I read Gelb's piece. And then, obviously, important to say, Brent Honeywell Jr., best friend of the show, somehow in this bullpen.
He did. Honeywell Jr. going from not making the A's last year to making the Padres this year is the best. Congrats to Brent. Okay.
Where do you want to go?
There's so much. So we should probably talk about Fernando Tatis Jr. Ever heard of him? We've spent plenty of time talking about him on many a podcast, in many pieces of content, since he has arrived in our baseball lives, since he was chilling on the White Sox backfields. Fernando Tatis Jr. is going to return on April 20th. He will be 420 blazing the baseball over the fence in his first at-bat. I have no doubt about it. The fact that he's now playing right field is just weird, because when I think about the visceral experience of watching Fernando Tatis Jr., it's him doing insane shit at shortstop, right? Which includes, you know, throwing the ball into the stands and just like all unpredictable things. He's both capable of the best shortstop play and the worst shortstop play. That is no longer in the picture, at least for this season. But it's all about him in the box. It's all about him on the field, being a part of this team. His offensive numbers are so ridiculous that you almost forget. It's like you remember that he's one of the best players, but it's and what it feels like watching him and how fast he is and how high he can jump and all about it. But the reality is the production here was nuts. This guy can be truly one of the 3 to 4 best hitters, you know, full stop, in the league. And if that is true when they come back, then this lineup is going to be unlike really anything we've seen in quite some time.
I think that most of the baseball world right now is willing to forgive and forget. I think we have bought into the new Fernando. The mature, thoughtful, not dumb, going to take steroids and lie about it. Ringworm Fernando. Okay. My little league kids that I coach, my 9, 10, 11 year old kids, they're amped about getting to watch Fernando Tatis again. I don't necessarily think that younger ball fans are up in arms about steroids in the same way that maybe we or the generation above us were, because they did not live at all through the steroid era, if that makes sense. And so they are also able to parse out kind of the moral, like, differences between something like Mike Clevenger, Trevor Bauer, and Fernando Tatis Jr. I think kids, not my 9, 10, 11-year-olds, but like teenagers, teenage ball fans are smart enough to do that. And I think Fernando is fine right now. He seems fine with his teammates, seems fine with the game. That being said, he does another dumb thing, we got problems. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, we don't get fooled again. You know? Like, when Cano got popped the first time, right, it was embarrassing and annoying, but what was really bad is when he got popped the second time. And I'm not saying that Fernando's going to get popped again, but I just don't – the ice, I think, is thinner than we want it to be. Like, we're so excited to see him back on a ball field. Yes, duh, of course. But if he does something else dumb, then it's a pattern. Then it's a real pattern with problems.
Oh, we're kind of past the pat, you know, it's
well, we just haven't seen him do anything in a year.
Yeah.
Right. And so time has given us the ability to forget a little bit. I'm all in. I'm not trying to rain on a parade here. I'm just saying it's something to keep in the back of our minds. I will pick him for my NL MVP just to show you how worried I actually am.
42 home runs in 130 games in 2021. I mean, he just turned 24, right? Like, this guy is still so young and still figuring out his world. But there's so much else to talk about on this team. Like, when you see this roster and you see the projections, like, when Preller's going out and just like, okay, sure, we'll add Walker. Okay, sure, we'll also do that. Remember, they started retaining Nick Martinez and retaining Robert Suarez for these huge deals. And then it's basically bring everybody back. It's not Jerks and Profar in that sense. But yeah, I at the same time, like, what is this? What is the flaw here? Like, think about that as a compliment, right? Like, what are the problems with this roster? I think is a fair thing to ask. How can this maybe go a little off the rails? What do you think?
I think it is the pitching more so than the lineup. Like, I just think these hitters are going to rake. Last year, they had incredible Musgrove, very good Darvish, up and down Snell. I think it's reasonable, if you want to be a Debbie Downer, to expect Musgrove to regress a little bit. I think it's totally reasonable to expect Yu Darvish, who is 30. Almost 37 years old, to at some point lose a little bit of zip. If that happens, then you're relying on Blake Snell, the most volatile pitcher in the world, and Martinez, Walker, Lugo, and beyond. Now, the reason I have faith in this team and the reason I'm not worried about the pitching is because they have so many of those second-level guys, right, of Martinez, Walker, and Lugo, that they will have enough arms to, in the event of disaster, they'll have enough depth to push past it.
Yeah, definitely to survive, but the ceiling can disappear pretty quickly if any of those top guys regress. Because if we're penciling in the seasons Musgrove and Yu Darvish just had, then that could end up being a mistake. But I agree with you. I mean, you go down not just the ones who are, you know, in the bullpen or on the team right now, but even guys like Jay Groom and, you know, Reese Kinnear. And like there's a lot of, I think even Julio Teheran, I think, is going to stick around in the organization. Like, they're going to have a lot of options there, which I agree with. You know, you could, I think the other one, obvious one to point out is Nelson Cruz and Matt Carpenter could just be toast, right? And obviously we already thought about that about Cruz last year. And he said, oh, I got my vision corrected and now I'm feeling good. And Carpenter looked like the best hitter in the world. But how much do we really believe that? So that's the other part, is putting all your eggs in that, you know, DH basket is also maybe a little bit troublesome. At the same time, like, the top five in the lineup could be one of the best we've ever seen in baseball. That is a fact. And so that's going to cover up a lot. At the same time, there could be stretches where you're watching the bottom of this lineup and you're just like praying that somebody could get on so we can get back to the top. Because when Grisham is bad, he's really bad. And Austin Nola has not been a good hitter for quite some time. And so if Carpenter and Cruz start to struggle, the bottom half of this lineup could be, you know, close to as bad as the top is going to be good. Which is leads us to our last question, which is, rank the MVP finishes: Bogarts, Soto, Machado, Tatis Jr., Jay Cronenworth. This is such a fun game. So much of this might just have to do with how the order plays out. First of all, how would you bat them? What would be your preferred batting order? Bob Melvin has had quotes this spring saying that it's basically, you could, you know, pick it out of a hat. I think that's mostly true.
I hope he does that live on the broadcast.
If it was up to you, what would your batting order be? And then let's pick the MVP finishes in order.
Tatis, Soto, Machado, Bogarts.
I think I agree. I think I would do Bogarts third, Machado fourth. But yes, I think that makes sense. I mean, he already hinted at wanting to do Tatis leadoff, so I think that makes a lot more sense.
How if would you I had rank to rank the MVPs? The MVP finishes, I'll go Tatis, Soto, Machado, Bogarts.
I'll go Soto, Tatis, Bogarts, Machado. I think Machado is another one where possibly at least a smidge of regression. And Bogarts is the kind of guy where you will get the bonus of being like, oh no, like they actually did need Bogarts to, you know, dominate this division for whatever reason. And so I think narrative wise that could help him if he's just as awesome and healthy as he always is. That's the other thing with Bogarts, you know for sure. And Machado, you know for sure they're going to play. All right, let's get to our barometer bonds. I think we debated Trent Grisham here, but Blake Snell feels more important. Blake Snell, the ultimate volatile beast. He is probably one of both the most fun and least fun pitchers to watch because he has some of the best stuff in the world. When he's on, it is probably the best left-handed stuff in the world when you consider how good the off-speed stuff is. And it just drives us crazy because it's like, dude, throw it down the middle, you will get outs. Yep. And instead, he just goes to full count after full count after full count. The pitch count goes crazy, and it drives everyone nuts. But my God, is he talented. He is going to be a free agent after the season. He's starting on opening day, and I think he's awesome. He's, you know, he's the one lefty in this rotation, too, for now. So I think it's going to be really important for him to deliver against, you know, some of the better left-handed lineups in the league. And he's got to make it happen, both for himself and for the team. He is a huge, huge, huge deal.
Over under 93.5. Is that right?
Yeah. That's, again, like, if you're Vegas, why would you, like, they're begging you to take that. They're betting you to bet against the Dodgers, right? I mean, this is, I think, a pretty easy over here, but this is where history starts to spook you a little bit. What do you, seems like you like the Padres more than the Dodgers. That's not a hot take. What would you say is the gap here? Do you think it's a sizable difference?
I think it'll be decently close.
Okay.
Yeah.
But still easy over on the 93.5.
I'll take the over on the 93. Yeah.
Okay. All right. That is the San Diego Padres. That is the NL West. We have done it. We have previewed all the baseball teams. The baseball season begins in just over 24 hours from when we are recording this. On Wednesday morning, we will have an opening day special episode with some opening day thoughts, as well as our awards and division postseason World Series winning picks. That will be coming out Thursday morning when you wake up, so you can check that out tomorrow. But otherwise, thank you to Jake Mintz for previewing the NL West with me. Thank you to Chris Tyler. Chris Tyler, join us. Giants, were we too mean, too nice? What do you think?
I think you're pretty bang on the money. The one factor that you didn't bring up, though, in this whole discussion is the fact that the Carlton Football Club of the Australian Football League is actually going to be pretty good this year. Okay. And so for me personally,
you're fine.
It's not going to be as much of a slog to watch the Giants when I have my Australian football team actually look like they're a competent football club for the first time in over 10 years.
Oh,
having okay. that there is going to make the rest of this much easier to deal with. Like you said, we're not going to be bad. We've had a lot of success over the past 15 years.
That's true.
A couple of years ago, that was fun.
That's another thing with Giants fans, right?
Yeah.
You're still have had way more fun and success than 90% of the other teams. So, if not more than that. So, like, you're going to be okay. But I'm glad Carlton is looking strong. That fires me up. You'll keep us posted on that. Thank you for producing this episode, Chris. We appreciate it. Thank you to Nick Pecoro for joining us to talk about the Snakes. Jake, final thoughts before we say goodbye.
NL West.
SiriusXM Podcasts.